Welcome to the jump. First of all, Jackie, you have lost nothing off your fastball. You need no advice from anyone. Welcome to the jump. I am Rachel Nichols, indeed, alongside the Hall of Famer, Ms. Jackie McMullen, and NBA champ Kendrick Perkins. Coming up later in the show, I am going to ask Perk and Jackie which stock they would rather have more of right now, the Celtics or the Heat, because they square off tonight right here on ESPN. First, though, for years now, it has been painful to be a Knicks fan. And yeah, the losing has been part of it. There has been so much losing. The Knicks entered this season with the worst record in the entire NBA over the last 6 years. They not only have the longest active playoff drought in the Eastern Conference, every other East team has made the playoffs at least twice since New York last did. Still, even the losing might not be what stings as much as the way the franchise has gone about it. Missing out on free agents while throwing wheelbarrows full of cash at the wrong ones. Draft boards that look like plates of scrambled eggs. Switching coaches every time the wind changes. New York has had 8 head coaches in the past 10 years. And of course, don't forget the lack of respect that the franchise has shown for some of the faces that fans have loved the most. Charles Oakley, Carmelo Anthony, Spike Lee. At times, the bar in New York has seemed so low, a turtle could jump over it, and yet the franchise still never seemed to manage it, which is what makes what has been happening over the past 10 months so fascinating. Starting in March, with the hire of President Leon Rose, the Knicks have been doing, yes, say it with me, the right thing, over and over. They hired a coach in Tom Thibodeau who had a track record for building the exact kind of team culture the Knicks have been so desperately in need of. They drafted smart more than once. And when free agency came around, they neither overspent on a has-been star nor filled the roster with players who all play the same position. And we have already seen the results. Entering tonight's game against Utah, the Knicks have won 4 of their last 5. They are above 500 after 7 games, the first time that's happened since the 2012-2013 season. This Knicks team is also tougher than any we've seen in a while, especially defensively, where they are now tied for 10th in the league after sitting at 23rd last season. They play quicker. They share the ball more, especially Julius Randle, who has undergone his own metamorphosis. You remember Randle last season, right? All that dribble, 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 dribble before plowing into triple team coverage. The lack of energy on defense at times. Well, Randle gets a lot of credit for coming back this season in better shape and with a renewed hunger for rebounding. But it's more than that. Randle is passing the ball in a way we have never seen him do before. His 7.5 assists per game, that is on pace to double his prior career high. And while it's not clear yet just how sustainable the rest of these numbers are, if Randle can truly transform into a point forward, it unlocks so much of everyone else's game. Indeed, we've already seen the growth from RJ Barrett. We've seen flashy fun from rookie Emmanuel Quickley, steadying vet play from Austin Rivers. By the way, when those two are on the court together, fans have taken to nicknaming the duo Quivers, which is just fantastic. It was Quickley who's shown in the Knicks' last game a win over the Hawks, in which he played almost the entire fourth quarter and finished with 16 points off the bench. And don't forget Mitchell Robinson, who recently credited the coaching staff with teaching him how to better position his hands to stay out of foul trouble, something that's been particularly important as injuries have made it even more crucial for the team's better players to be able to stay on the floor. Of course, this is a Thibodeau team, which means that the Knicks' best players are on the floor a lot. Barrett and Randle rank number 1 and 2 in the entire league in playing time so far this season. But they're both young enough, they should be able to handle it. And the consistency that all that playing time brings has been a big part of establishing the new way the team is doing things, which is really the key, right? Because yes, it is nice to be winning instead of losing. But even if the Knicks go through another bad stretch sometime this season, and they probably will, it finally feels like fans can have some faith in the way the team is being run. Winds of change, indeed. All right, guys. It is a new day in New York. Maybe we're going to introduce a new segment here on The Jump called Good Story or Good Team. So, Kendrick, you heard me talk about the Knicks, why they have been a good story this season. But is that all they are? Or are they actually a good team that we will be talking about all season long?
No, Rachel, they are actually a good team. Listen, we are finally saying something good about the Knicks. What has been over a decade that we've been talking nothing but bad things about the Knicks, and here they are. And it started with the hiring of Coach Tom Thibodeau. You remember when everyone had all these questions about Coach Tibbs? Was he going to be able to adjust? And you remember I told you on the show right when he got hired, I said Tibbs had time to reflect on himself and learn the new generation. And it shows on the court. One thing you know about Tom Thibodeau is that he's going to demand guys to play defense at the highest level, and that's what the Knicks have been doing. He's going to prepare guys. He's going to have them ready. Guys are going to know their personnel. On the offensive end, Tibbs is letting these guys be themselves. They are playing freely together. Julius Randle has always been a stud in my eyes. Now he has a coach that actually believes in not only his scoring and rebounding, but his ability to create for others. I love the way the direction that the Knicks are going in. And I said they are a sleeper pick to making the playoffs in the Eastern Conference.
Wow. So Perk, I agree. This is a really good story. I guess my definition of a good team would be a playoff team. And while I'm as pleased as anyone watching what Tibbs has done to transform this team, and by the way, be fair, it really didn't start with Tibbs. It started with Leon Rose, who has changed the culture there and then hired Tibbs. So let's give credit where credit is due. And I do think it's unbelievable to see the Knicks as a top 10 defensive team. I give pause and try to bring a little perspective to this only for this reason. Some of the numbers are so video game, I'm just not sure they're sustainable, including Julian Randle, who, by the way, when Tibbs was hired, I asked around, and the first thing GMs and coaches said was, where do you see what he does with Randle? He's going to transform Randle. He's going to get Randle back on his footing, and that has all come to pass. But, you know, will Alex Burks shoot 67% from the three-point line? Can Julius Randle keep up those incredible numbers? Will Austin Rivers shoot 46% from three? Those are the numbers that are making this team what they are right now. I'm not sure they're sustainable. It doesn't take away from the fact that they're building something. And if you ask the Knicks, that's the most important thing anyway.
It has been so long and so frustrating for people who, I mean, this is an incredibly loyal fan base. I am so impressed with New York Knicks fans all the time. Everything that has been put in front of them, they still keep coming back, believing in their team. And finally, again, whether it's rewarded with the playoff berth or not, and with the play-in tournament, it's possible they could at least be in that ninth spot, right? Somewhere in there. Whether that ends there or not, just that feeling that the franchise is not wandering in the darkness the way it has been in a lot of the recent years, I just think that shows a level of respect for the fans that we have not seen in quite some time. All right, next up, we have the Orlando Magic, who are 5-2 so far this season. So, Jackie, they were playoff team last year. Still not sure anyone expected to start this good. So, is the Magic a good story or a good team?
So I think they have the potential to be both. When Jonathan Isaac went down in the bubble, he was arguably their best player, and you thought, oh boy, this is going to be tough for them. But Vucevic has more than picked up the slack. He's off to an incredible start. The problem the Magic has, and it was a problem last year too, is it's scoring, it's perimeter scoring in particular. If your name isn't Vucevic or Terrence Ross right now, nobody else can shoot from the three-point line. So what teams are going to start to do is push guys like Markelle Fultz, who's shooting about 39% from the floor, out beyond the rim and say, go on, try to beat us that way. But I love Steve Clifford's defense. I love the focus this team has. And they have, you know, their rookies have struggled a bit, like all the rookies, I think, because it's so tough not to have a preseason, all that. So I think they are still a playoff team. And Vucevic, what he's doing is just amazing.
I agree. They are a good story in my eyes. I'm a big fan of Steve Clifford. He's one of the best defensive-minded coaches in the game today. But when you look at this roster, Markelle Fultz has got off to a great start, in my opinion. The way that he's attacking the basket, rebounding at a high level, facilitating for others, pushing the pace. Aaron Gordon, he's come alive now and is finally giving the Magic what they have been expecting out of him in this short sample size that we have been witnessing. But the guy who's been the X factor besides Big Vucevic, is Terrence Ross. Has been coming off the bench and he has been tearing the league up. Right now, if you had to hand a Sixth Man of the Year award to anybody, it would be him. And I'm so mad at myself because I left the Orlando Magic out of my preseason rankings in my top eight in the Eastern Conference, and shame on me, because they are a great story, they are a good team, and they will be in the playoffs this season.
Well, let's stick in the East, because next up we have the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are above 500 with a 4-3 record. Perk, your old squad, one of them, are the Cavs a good story or a good team?
They're a good story. They're getting better, Rachel. But I'm a huge fan of J.B. Bickerstaff. If you look back last year, I wasn't a fan of the hiring of Beeline. I thought that he was a little bit too old for what the players they have in Garland and Colin Sexton. Listen, they drafted Colin Sexton a few years back in the lottery, and a lot of people doubted this young man. But he's a young bull. He plays with a tenacity, a chip on his shoulder, and he's getting better every single year. And I'm not surprised that the Cavs are right where they're at right now, and they have been in every game that they played in, and it's because of the leadership of J.B. Bickerstaff. He demands the best out of Andre Drummond, and he has the respect of the locker room, and that goes a long way.
You're dead on with that. JB has really made a huge difference. And what do you ask of your young team? What you ask of your own players is to come back better and stronger and have taken that leap. And Colin Sexton certainly has done that. The numbers he's putting up has been great. And so has Winston Garland. Now, he's out now for a bit. But Sexland's the best nickname in the entire NBA. And so I love that, too. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. Kevin Love hasn't even played yet, really, of any consequence. So the other player that we should mention here is Isaac Okoro, who's also been out now. But when he was in there, he was very, very important to them. So if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers, what do you want to do this season? You want to identify and define your future going forward. You're on your way now with Sexton, Garland, and Isaac Okoro.
All right. Well, last but not least, again, staying in the East, I want to get to the 4-3 Atlanta Hawks. So, Jackie, are the Hawks a good story or a good team?
I think they are both. They're off to a great start. And the thing that interests me about them was they made all these moves. They added a bunch of veterans, some of whom, Gallinari and Rondo, really haven't even been able to contribute yet because of injury. And in the midst of all this, people started speculating, well, I guess there's no room for John Collins. Well, John Collins has had something to say about that. He's
that's
like
for sure.
17-5. He's putting up great numbers. And he looks like a guy that's here to stay. I mentioned that the veterans that haven't even contributed it yet, I like where this team is headed. I think they are a playoff team. Trae Young is a flat-out star. He just is.
Yep.
And we talk all about Luka Doncic. Maybe it's time to put that aside for now and just pay attention to what this kid is doing.
Great.
Not just scoring, but also getting everybody else on his team involved. I really think this team is one of the most fun teams in the league right now.
I agree. It's both for me, Rachel and Jackie. When you look at the Hawks, look at the four guys, their core guys that they drafted. You know, you're looking at Trae Young. You're looking at DeAndre Hunter. Looking at John Collins. You're looking at Cam Reddish. All these guys have gotten better. Trae Young is a superstar, but Cam Reddish, I knew he had the offensive skill set, and I knew the future was bright for him offensively. I didn't know he was I didn't know he could defend the way he defends at the high level, the intensity that he brings. The addition of adding a guy like Clint Capella, a lob threat, a guy that can anchor the defense, protect the basket. And then John Collins, a guy that said, you know what? I'm going to roll the dice and bet on myself. He turned down a four-year $99 million extension to say, you know what, I'm worth more. And he's showing that now. And now you're bringing in a guy like Herter and playoff Rondo. Rondo haven't even played yet, but just his leadership being in that locker room. I'm looking at this Atlanta Hawks team, and they are very dangerous, and they arguably have the most scoring firepower in the NBA.
Well, look, we got a little bit of Rondo, at least so far. Perk, that's a great point about the draft picks, too, because the ownership made a decision, right, to stack the front office based on scouting experience as opposed to just going for a flashy name.
Right.
And we're seeing it. We're seeing the benefits of that, and they're an exciting team. They're a lot of fun to watch.
With game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals between the Celtics and Raptors just over 24 hours away from its scheduled tip, the possibility of players boycotting the game continues to remain on the table. The Milwaukee Bucks are boycotting game five of their series against the Orlando Magic. This game is not happening.
Not only a message to America and not only a message to the world, but it's a message to Wisconsin.
A player's decision. They made this decision to boycott this game. This is a moment in time, a moment in history. We have never seen this in professional sports.
I do not think that the Milwaukee Bucks will be the only team to boycott, Rachel. I don't see how the Milwaukee Bucks could be the only team.
The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets will not be playing their game.
You will not see any basketball tonight. I think the better question now is, when are you going to see basketball again?
You haven't seen anything like this in the modern era. It's one thing to raise a lot of noise. It's another thing to refuse to play the games. This is a different level. This is a different ball game right here.
Welcome back to The Jump. That video was, of course, from our show on August 26th. We were live on the air when the Bucks prompted a three-day shutdown of the NBA in protest of the Kenosha law enforcement officers shooting and paralyzing Jacob Blake. The Bucks walkout rippled through the rest of the sports world, with the WNBA, Major League Baseball also postponing games. And while play did resume, the anger and frustration over yet another act of extreme brutality did not go away. And so it was another tough blow again yesterday when prosecutors in Kenosha, Wisconsin decided not to file criminal charges against any of the police officers involved. And again, just to remind you of the details, Blake, who is black, was shot seven times by Kenosha police officer Rustin Chesky, who is white. The shooting, which occurred in front of three of Blake's children, was captured on video. The Bucks released this statement yesterday via Twitter. The Bucks organization remains firmly against excessive use of force by law enforcement. This past year shed light on the ongoing racial injustices facing our African-American and other marginalized communities. Recurring instances of excessive use of force, immediate escalation when engaging the black community must stop. We will continue to work to enact policy change so these incidents no longer exist. Now, last night, the Marquette men's basketball team wore black uniforms for their home game in Milwaukee against UConn. This was in support of Jacob Blake and his family, quote, the Kenosha community and reaction to the announcement. A myriad of NBA players also reacting via social media and in their post-game press availabilities. Here's just a small sample. We're starting with LeBron James.
It's a blow to our community once again. And we've been here. We've been here before. It sucks. We feel sorry for his family and for that community itself. And we want better. We want better. And hopefully we can get that.
It's sad that it's become a thing, you know, where it's like you don't really expect any justice out of these things, because it's like, man, like, you know, you're as an African-American male. It's just one of those things where you're scared, and it doesn't matter who the hell you are. It doesn't matter if, you know, the most famous person in the world or, you know, whatever. Like, at the end of the day, your job is your job. I play basketball, but I'm an African-American male, and I have African-American women in my life and so on. And it's just disheartening, man.
It's upsetting as a Wisconsinite. It's upsetting as a human being, you know, that and justice is injustice. And, It's tough.
I want to welcome in our ESPN NBA reporter, Eric Woodyard. Eric, welcome back to the show. You, of course, cover the Bucks for us and the Midwest region. And I just wanted to start with what the people inside the Bucks organization are saying in response to this news that no charges are going to be pursued against the officers.
Rick Lopez, we spoke to him this morning, and I asked him at shoot around before the Pistons game. He described it as a feeling of helplessness. I mean, guys, you know, they boycotted games, and guys did a lot, you know, put a lot of energy and time into this to get this type of result. So they didn't feel like everything went in vain, but guys do feel a sense of helplessness. Also, speaking to the front office, John Horst, today, and, you know, he was saying the same thing, is, you know, guys really just are not necessarily in shock, but guys are just feeling that a gut in their, you know, like the punch in the gut in their stomach more so than anything. But they're going to continue to fight. Their work is not going to go in vain. But it definitely was a punch in the gut today.
Yeah, I mean, the walkout that we're seeing video from this summer was just a seminal moment in the history of the NBA and across American sports. Are there any plans tonight for the Bucks to protest or make any sort of mark during their game against the Pistons?
The Bucks have been in a group chat. Everyone has been speaking and talking. They haven't come up with a plan the last time I spoke to them. But there could possibly be something, whether it comes tonight or moving forward. But it's definitely been in the talks. It's been in discussions. Obviously, the guys that led the protest last year, Sterling Brown, you look at Wesley Matthews, George Hill, those guys aren't there, but they still have that same DNA of types of players. You know, they've brought in, you know, Torrey Craig. They've brought in DJ Augustine. If you look at Jrue Holiday and the work he's done, he's already pledged to give the remainder of his salary away, you know, to black businesses and individuals who are doing things as well, him and his wife. And it's still kind of that DNA. The fight continues. And it just was a punch in the gut, not only for the Bucks, but just for the black community as well.
Yeah, you grew up in Flint, Michigan. What, you cover this league, you covered the Bucks going through all of this summer. What has it felt like for you the past 24 hours?
Unfortunately, it's almost kind of become routine in a sense. It's bad that it sounds that way, but that's just the reality. I mean, in my hometown, we've dealt with the water crisis. It's still somewhat being sorted out. We just got a settlement. You look at this situation. You look at George Floyd. You look at Breonna Taylor. It's been situation after situation. Honestly, I would be shocked if something were to happen, if someone were to be charged, if somebody were to do time in prison for constantly using excessive force. So obviously, I'm not that shocked. And it's bad that it's that way in America.
Absolutely. I want to bring Kendrick and Jackie back into this conversation. And Perk, you were with us the day the Bucks decided not to play in that playoff game on August 26th. What was your reaction when this came across yesterday afternoon?
You know, I was upset and I was disappointed. You look at Jacob Blake, his life has changed forever. This man is paralyzed, and then I think about his children. That's going to be inside. That's going to be in their memory for the rest of their lives. And Rachel, you know, I'm not a prosecutor. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know too much about the system, but I do know right from wrong, and I do know what happened to him wasn't right. And for the police officers to get off with not any charges. I mean, not a misdemeanor, not nothing. It's very disturbing to me, and what it's going to do is going to be a ripple effect to let the police officers around the world know that if they do it, it's okay, that they might not, that they might get off for doing an act like this, and it's a shame.
You know, it's funny, Rachel, the first person I thought of really was George Hill when I heard this, because his emotion was so raw last year. Mm-hmm. You know, his resignation when he was like, I don't even know why we're here. I don't even know why we're playing. I thought that encapsulated about the feelings of probably many, many players throughout the league. And of course, George is in Oklahoma City now. I'm sure that doesn't change his feelings about what happened in Kenosha and the results of this. I also thought the timing of this, and maybe it's because I'm a conspiracy theorist to some degree, I thought it was very interesting that these charges, no charges were announced just as the Georgia Senator runoffs were getting into full swing and the nation's attention was on those very important Senate races that were born from, in some regards, as we're going to talk about in a minute, from the WNBA and other players. So I thought that timing, I didn't like that. You know, I felt it was a way for them to sort of get that news off and on to the next. And I don't know if that was purposeful, but it crossed my mind.
This has to stop. I mean, there's no other way to say this. This has to stop in this country. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. All you have to do is look at what's going on your television in my hometown today to understand the double standard in which we treat different people in this country depending on, quote, use of force or protesting or going for something violent, any of that. It has to stop. And the way the NBA has supported that and stood for that, I don't think it's going to change even with this decision in Kenosha. I do want to get to what you're alluding to, Jackie, with the Atlanta Dream. Kelly Loeffler, one of the co-owners, of course, lost her U.S. Senate runoff race in Georgia to Raphael Warnock, a Democratic candidate who was strongly endorsed by all of the WNBA players, including Loeffler's own team. The special election called early Wednesday by ABC News and the Associated Press. Democrat John Ossoff currently also ahead of Republican David Perdue, but that race still being called too close to call. Now, in reaction to last night's Georgia Senate runoffs, LeBron tweeted, "Think I'm going to put together an ownership group for the Dream. Who's in? Black votes matter." Jackie, talk a little bit about the impact the WNBA made in Georgia, especially in the race involving Kelly Loeffler.
Well, first of all, it's a conflict of interest to me to be in business with LeBron James, but otherwise, I would raise my hand. I'd be interested as a minority owner. But I think the thing that I loved most about the way the Dream Team, the Atlanta Dream, handled this whole incident was, of course, this was very emotional. They had very strong feelings against their owner. When we make things emotional, sometimes we don't get our message across. Cooler heads prevailed, and is there a cooler head in sports than Sue Bird? I doubt it. She galvanized that team together, and they handled this in the most brilliant way possible. Instead of ranting and raving and complaining, they simply did one thing. They got jerseys with their owner's opponent's name on them and wore them in warmups to a game. What a very powerful statement that captured the whole nation's attention. The WNBA players should feel great today, not just the Atlanta Dream, the whole league, because they affected change. Now, they're not Stacey Abrams, I'm not saying that, but they had a huge role in this, and they should feel really great today.
They should hold their heads up high, Rachel. And I've said this time and time again on the show with you is that the WNBA, not just for what happened yesterday for us with the voting and them having an impact, but overall, they were on the front line from the very beginning. They the ones that took the necessary step forward and action from times that things started happening. And then the NBA, the guys started to follow. So, you know, I just want to give all the women in the WNBA their flowers, because you look at what Maya Moore did. She was in the midst of her prime, an MVP candidate, one of the best players in the WNBA, and she walked away to go do something great in the world that she believed in. So when you look at what the women are doing, no knock on nobody else in the men, because they're doing a great job, but they have been on the front line since the beginning of time, and I love it.
I agree with Perk as well. I think what Maya Moore did was amazing. You know, I have a grandfather who was incarcerated as well, and to see what she done and them to continue to stick on these issues, the more exposure, the better. So although it might not happen today necessarily, they're planting those seeds for the next generations, the next Maya Moores, all these next stars who can make change. And we might not see it right now, but we have to continue to keep going, continue to keep fighting, and shout out to the WNBA. I think Maya Moore is going to go down with her impact with something like how Muhammad Ali would, or if she doesn't, she should, because that was really, really huge on her part.
Well, first of all, Perk, I want to thank you for saying that about the women of the WNBA, because there's no question they have been out front risking more, frankly. These are not players who have, you know, $100 million endorsement deals,
right,
and they have risked more earlier than anybody else, and I just think they deserve so much credit for doing the right thing.
Yes.
First. And I think it's an example, frankly, to all athletes. And I think the past few years we've seen this. We've seen athletes realize how much power they have, especially in today's economy, when they're not as dependent on a particular sponsor or a particular paycheck. They can really speak their mind and they can affect change. Our former colleague and friend Jamel Hill pointed out yesterday that just the awareness of Reverend Warnock's name shot up after the WNBA players wearing those shirts. There are so many things that we ask players to do in their communities, help with hurricane relief, help give out school supplies to kids. If we want them involved in our communities, they get to be all the way in. They get to have a voice in the decision about how those communities are run. And I just really applaud this group of women who got this done on their end, and the Georgians who came across and stood up for themselves too. It's a free election. Everyone should vote for who they want to, but we should welcome everybody at that table and then see and live with the results. So, Eric, thank you so much for joining us today. Such an important voice, and we'll look forward to your coverage on the Bucks and especially what the Bucks do tonight. That's really interesting information about the discussions they've been having. Thank you.
Thanks, Rachel. I appreciate it.
All right. Here's guys with the Jump Recommends for today. Our friend Kevin Arnovitz writing how the once mighty Warriors are learning how to be mere mortals in the NBA landscape. Head over to the ESPN app to read that during this quick break, because when we come back, we are previewing the Warriors' big game against the Clippers tonight. Stick with us. So let's dive into our first ESPN matchup tonight.
Heat Celtics. The Celtics 5-3, while the Heat are 3-3. Deeper dive into their early stats shows these two teams very different. Offensively, the Celtics have the edge. Heat far better. Defensively, the Celtics have also been offensive rebounding more, but the Heat score more on assisted baskets. So, Perk, given all those numbers and your own eye test, this is two teams very close to your heart. Which team are making you choose? Which would you rather buy stock in, the Celtics or the Heat?
Rachel, you know how I feel about them goons from Dade County, but Rachel, let me ask you a question. Who is our most improved player pick for this season? You and I, who we pick?
Well, who do you got right now, Perk? Because it's changed a few times.
Oh, I thought we was rolling with Jaylen Brown.
Oh, okay,
Jaylen
all right.
Brown and
yes,
Jason
I'm on
Tatum.
That, I'm gotta, on that train. Gotta, you know
I
that.
Okay. I got to keep my stock in the Celtics. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are on the rise of being one of the top duos in the league. In my eyes, they already top five. And then you add in my sleeper draft pick, Peyton Pritchard. We call him P. Rabbit in the Boston area. He has stepped up tremendously. Adding Tristan Thompson, Robert Williams playing well. My stock is into the Celtics.
I understand why you're saying that, Perk, and you're right. Jaylen Brown, Coach Fizz and I were talking a few weeks ago, forecasting on the show he should be a chance to be an all-star and maybe even an all-NBA defensive player. Here's the problem, though. I can't put all my stock with the Celtics till I know about Kemba Walker and his health. Because as much as I love those two guys, Perk, they can't go all the way unless they have Kemba Walker. And let's not sleep on the Miami Heat. Forget about the early record. Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch, too. And they go a little deeper than the Celtics do. And I do have to wonder about Boston's defense. 20th in the league. I've got to imagine that's going to change at some point.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can judge the Heat right now, right? I mean, they're coming off along with the Lakers, the shortest layoff in the NBA. We know how grueling the bubble was. And as Miami showed, look, they don't need to be a top seed to advance far in the playoffs. Also, I don't know if the Miami flu, as we call it, right, has had anything to do with it, that opposing teams no longer come down into South Florida and have quite the nights out that they might have in the past. And maybe by the playoffs, all that'll be back again too. So you just don't know. I wouldn't judge Miami right now. All right, it does good timing to have the Warriors as our second ESPN game tonight, because Steph Curry has been on a roll. He set out a career high 62 points against the Blazers, then dropped 30 points, 9 rebounds, and 8 assists on the Kings in a Warriors blowout victory. That was a back-to-back for those guys. Jackie, what do you expect from Steph? Do you think he will keep rolling tonight against the Clippers?
I expect Steph to keep rolling, and I think with the injuries, and he had a lot of time to think about the grind of being a defending champion with a bullseye on your back, and we know how stressful it was because we've heard bits and pieces since that dynasty ended. I think this is a new Steph who's just saying, you know what, I love the game. Look at these highlights. You can see it, how much he's enjoying this game and a different role and relishing the idea of being an underdog again, which he was most of his career before he got to Golden State and became an MVP.
Well, when you look at Steph, I could see it in them green eyes of his. Mm-hmm. He is on a mission. And if you think Patty Mills tore up the Clippers yesterday, you could just imagine what Steph Curry is going to do. He's in great physical shape. He's well-rested. He's on a mission right now. And he's not just shooting the hell out of the ball, Rachel and Jackie. He's actually doing it in various ways, attacking the basket, playing with great pace, moving without the ball, you know, facilitating for others. He's on a mission, and he looks like the MVP Steph that I saw about 5 or 6 years ago.
And you're also seeing, I'm going to keep saying it, it's the Draymond Green effect. Draymond getting his win back and being in the lineup the way he has, it has made a difference for Steph Curry. All right, up next, who said Embiid and Simmons can't play together? The Sixers have the best record in the league right now. Is this a blip or a trend? We will discuss that next. Yeah. Legendary. This is legendary. And our league pass game of the night, in a tale of two cities. Washington has started out a disappointing 2-5 after trading John Wall for Russell Westbrook. Philly off to a league-best 6-1 record this season. So, Jackie, is the Sixers owning the league's best record a blip or a trend?
I think it's a trend. Everybody says, can Simmons and Embiid play together? Yes, they can, if you bet the spacing and surround them with shooters, what they've done now with Curry and also Danny Green. The other thing is, Joel Embiid is fit. He hired a chef during the offseason. He's ramped up his training. He's averaging more minutes right now than Giannis, Anthony Davis, LeBron James. He's playing start to finish. Now, my only word of caution, not the hardest schedule so far. We'll learn a lot more in the second half of January when they play back-to-backs with Miami, Boston, and they also have the Laker those last 2 weeks of January. Then we'll know for sure.
I'm right there with you, Jackie. It's a trend, and the reason why is because Tobias Harris is playing some of his best basketball. Joel Embiid is playing some of his best basketball. And then it's one word comes to mind, chemistry. I see a lot of Mbutu togetherness over there. Guys look like they have a joy with playing with one another. I love the direction that Philly is going in, and they're only going to continue to get better.
It always comes back to the Celtics for you, Perk, doesn't it?
The 2008 Celtics, I'm telling you, a little time machine action. Fresh out of time for today, but the Jump returns tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll see you then.